Welcome to Meta Strategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Simon Nelson to the broadcast. Simon is the CEO of FutureLearn, a massive open online course, or MOOC, founded in late 2012 as a company majority owned by the UK's Open University. Simon also oversees digital activities for Fight on Press, a role he retained while joining FutureLearn. Prior to his current roles, Simon led a number of projects in the TV, radio, and publishing sectors for companies that include Random House, UK TV, Specific Media, and New York Public Radio. He also spent more than a decade at the BBC, leading all digital activities for the BBC's television divisions, where he helped launch the iPlayer and built an award-winning portfolio of online and cross-platform services. Simon is a graduate of the University of Cambridge and holds an MBA from the University of Manchester. I recently caught up with Simon in his office in London, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as we discussed the genesis of FutureLearn, the advantages of being a rare non-professor leading a major MOOC, as well as his vision for the changes that the successful MOOCs enact upon traditional universities, and a variety of other topics. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by Red Hat, the world's leading open source solutions provider. Learn more at redhat.com.
Well, Simon Nelson, welcome to the Forum on World Class IT.
Thank you, Peter.
Simon, I'm so delighted to speak with you, and as I understand it, on a very auspicious day for FutureLearn, as you're offering your first course. So I should start the conversation with a hearty congratulations to you and to your organization for this milestone.
Thank you. It's incredibly exciting, yeah, to witness real learners engaging with real content and see, you know, the vision we've been working towards for the last year starting to come to life. It's a brilliant day.
That's wonderful. And may I ask what the first course is?
Yeah, it's The Secret Power of Brands. It's a 10-week course delivered by the University of East Anglia.
And how was that chosen as the first one?
A combination of reasons, I guess. But we always felt it was quite a powerful, accessible course that we'd put up there. And then also, because it was a 10-week run, you know, we wanted to get it in there early. We also ran a couple of weeks of this course in a private beta over the summer, and so we got some learnings out of it then, and we're keen to test it now in what we're describing as our public beta phase, when some new features have been added to the course, etc., and to the platforms. One of the things we're really keen to do is to make learning a shared experience, and looking at the debates, the discussions, the activity that's already happening after just a few hours in that course. It's incredibly exciting to see that coming together.
Can you tell us a bit about FutureLearn, its inception, and your vision for the organization, at least as we sit here today?
Sure. So FutureLearn, my involvement with it started about 10 months ago, in November of last year, when I was doing a little bit of work with the Open University in the UK. Now, the Open University was established about 43 years ago, initially called the University of the Airwaves. It was set up to welcome anyone of any educational background into higher education, made innovative use of the BBC's broadcast TV and radio airwaves in order to deliver new forms of learning. And that expertise has developed over the following 40 odd years. And they were very much pioneers in different forms of online learning and continue to be so. Now, around November last year, I was introduced to their vice chancellor just at the moment that he was plotting an entry to the MOOC space. And he asked me if I'd like to set up and run the company. Didn't take me long to say yes. And then thus started quite a fast ride, really, to set up our first partnerships, hire a team, get product development underway, identify the areas that we were going to look to innovate and differentiate in, and then build. And so it's great to get to this stage, but this still only feels like the start of a long journey rather than the end.
Yes. You mentioned the starting point through the Open University. It has been in existence for quite some time now, and in some ways offers a model of sorts. Naturally, it's not a true MOOC, and thus the reason, presumably, for setting up something different from the Open University. But I wonder what lessons you and others have drawn from the experience of the Open University into now Future Learn and the way in which you've structured that organization.
The Open University, I would say, is a world leader in distance learning and online learning, and in really understanding the ways in which people learn and creating environments that really maximize the learning potential of everyone who goes through their courses. Now, delivering that in an open online sense, actually, again, they've been doing that for many years and pioneering in some of the ways of delivering that. So they use iTunes U extensively and are one of the most popular providers on iTunes U, incidentally, surpassing many more well-known international brands because of the quality of their content. And using YouTube, and they have their own OpenLearn service. So in some ways, as they saw MOOCs developing, there was something of a school of thought there that was saying, but hold on, we're already doing this. But then as they watched what was happening and the way that the MOOCs were capturing the imagination of, you know, huge numbers of people, they realized actually this was a development of some of the things they've been doing. In particular, the potential to take large numbers of people through courses at the same time and to help them learn together and from each other was something that was particularly exciting. So the Vice Chancellor of the Open University, who's now my chairman, he regarded it as an opportunity to basically use the Open University's expertise, its technologies, and also to put its funding behind powering a response to MOOCs from some of the leading UK universities. We launched in December last year with initially 11 partner universities, and we now have 23 of broadly the top 30 UK universities. So universities like Bath, Bristol, Birmingham, Exeter, Southampton, Leeds, Lancaster, some great universities in there. And we've now begun to supplement those as well by working with international universities. So brilliant international brands such as Monash in Australia, Trinity College in Dublin, and the University of Auckland.
Wonderful. I wanted to actually also talk about your own background relative to some of the other leading MOOCs CEOs. You are not an academic and actually come from the business world, come from the media world. In fact, you've spent considerable time at the BBC, for instance. What was it about the combination of your past experience and this opportunity that you felt fit together so well?
So I spent nearly 15 years at the BBC, and I set up and ran the first digital services for their radio and music side. And then I headed up all digital services for their TV side. And some of the sort of things that we led on in that time was the development of on-demand services and new web services from the BBC. Now, there are many parallels with what I'm doing now, in that partly that was about creating a sort of startup environment, but within a sector that came from quite a traditional background and in some ways was initially resistant to change. So BBC Radio, BBC Television, particularly with the onset of on-demand services, there was a lot of fear and trepidation, actually, about what they may do to the traditional forms of listening and viewing programs. The clear parallel there is in working with universities, some of whom are quite advanced in their digital thinking, some of whom are still in the earliest stages of it. And I find that a really exciting challenge to, on the one hand, innovate, move forward at pace, to have the advantage of using well-known, established, highly respected brands, but also the requirement to lead, to bring people with you, to paint the picture of potential, rather than just try and scare people into the future. And so that's one great parallel. And the other one, of course, is that, I mean, the BBC is a great learning organization in its own right. Part of its original mission, its founding mantra, was to inform, educate, and entertain. I always took that educate part very seriously in all the work I did. I developed a number of services that whose aim was to try and unlock more of the educational value, both informal and formal, in the fantastic BBC archives. And now that I'm running Future Learn, I see it almost as the other way around, really, to, I guess, unlock the higher education establishments of the UK and beyond to people who otherwise wouldn't have dreamt of trying out a course from those institutions. And partly to do that by making them more enjoyable, more entertaining, using some of the tools that we had at our disposal in a media organization like the BBC to bring learning to life for people who otherwise wouldn't have regarded it as an option.
Very interesting. I like the parallels, as you describe, of the multiple industries now that you've been involved in that have gone through major disruptions that are led by the internet and digital media, and certainly this is one of those. What's so exciting about the MOOC space is, of course, it's early days, and the winners and losers have not yet been set. The best business models have not been defined necessarily, or at least not definitively so. And I wonder, actually, as you think about what you and Future Learn are doing, and you think about the many institutions that are part of it, I'm sure you've had a chance to think about the many ways in which Future Learn complements the traditional university experiences versus those areas where it competes with it. I wonder how you think about the balance between those two.
Sure, it's a great question. Firstly, I couldn't agree more that this is a nascent market and the rules have not been written. In a lot of the commentary I read or some of the statements that come out, there is an implication that we're far further ahead than actually I believe we are. And the models in this market, consumer, business models, etc., are still very much emerging. In terms of the relationship with universities and traditional education, again, I don't think we quite know where MOOCs are going to fit in. What I am absolutely sure about is that, you know, all universities need to embrace online in more significant ways than I believe many have done at the moment, both for their on-campus students, who are now of a generation that would absolutely expect a combination of face-to-face with digital technologies in order to further their learning. And a whole range of, you know, other social experiences and administrative experiences of that university. But also to reach out to new students, to market themselves, to put themselves now on a global stage where anyone, anywhere in the world is able to come in and sample some of the best courses from some of the best universities in the world. Now, you can either see that as a threat and something you have to be in, otherwise some other leading brand is stealing mindshare, or you can see that as an unbelievable opportunity, unprecedented opportunity to unlock the best content from your institution, the best academics, the best brains, the best talent, and really put them out there for anyone, anywhere in the world to be exposed to. There are a whole range of social, public service, but also commercial opportunities that I believe are going to flow from that. And while the market continues to develop, I think it's really important for institutions like our partner universities to get in there early and to learn and to experiment and to gather some of the data and information that you can only gain from being in there. And I believe that that's a key motivation for many of our partners.
One of several reasons that are given among the American MOOCs for the need for the offerings that they provide in the United States is the skyrocketing cost of higher education. And certainly not exclusive to the elite universities, but universities, generally speaking, have been growing at double the rate of healthcare costs, for instance, in our country. In the UK, although it certainly is not cheap to go to university, it doesn't cost nearly as much. So I wondered how the argument of the replacement for or supplement of cost of an education that may be inaccessible, to what extent does that play into the way in which you think about things in the home market in the UK?
Well, actually, in the UK, there has been quite a revolution in the cost of a university education. Fees have gone up very, very significantly just in the last few years. So it's a very, very hot topic for all universities and all potential students in the UK. I personally don't see MOOCs as a response to that, although I do think that they will go a long way towards broadening access for people who otherwise couldn't or wouldn't have considered a university education, people from different ages, different economic and educational backgrounds. But at the moment, you know, we're nowhere near putting a full university degree online and nor is the web anywhere near replicating some of the core benefits of going to a university. That said, in my opinion, when the internet hits an industry, it tends to find its way into some of the inefficiencies in that industry. Those things that can be better delivered online generally will ultimately be better delivered online. And those things where it's purely tradition that have created the status quo can get swept away. So one of the things that I find very interesting in going around all the universities, and actually when you look at the way universities present themselves, market themselves, position themselves, a lot of it is based around physical buildings. A lot of the discussion is around physical buildings. A lot of the business of the management of a university is about funding, building, and it's about physical environments. And while I don't dismiss that by any stretch of the imagination, I do worry that an excessive focus on the new lecture hall will maybe miss some of the incredible opportunities to deliver new forms of learning via vastly more efficient ways. So that's just one area which I'd look at the moment.
I know in our country, as I've spoken with the leaders of several of the MOOCs here, there's a debate as to what sort of courses are best suited for this medium. And there are those who will say that it's the STEM courses that are best suited, just in terms of the content that is taught, the focus in many cases on quantitative as opposed to qualitative analysis, as opposed to traditional liberal arts courses. But mind you, there are a number of them that have gone more broad as opposed to just narrowly focusing on the STEM courses. Are there certain kinds of topics, certain fields and disciplines that you think are best suited to this medium as it applies to future learn?
I'd say we're learning. I'm going to end this week a hell of a lot more informed than I began this week, because I'm going to finally have real data from future learn learners to start better informing my answer to that question. But let me give you my instincts at this stage. We go back to the fact this is an emergent market. I think that a MOOC is not a single thing. MOOC providers are very different. The different types of technology one can use to deliver learning can deliver different aspects of different subjects in very different ways. So there's no doubt that some of the assessment in its current form probably leans more towards STEM subjects, but advances are being made in aspects of peer review and peer assessment that may make more arts-based subjects more viable from an assessment point of view. We're certainly trying to innovate in those kind of areas. But one of the most interesting things for me is going to be the development of the social tools that one can wrap around MOOCs. So it's something that we've really put a lot of emphasis on in FutureLearn, to really take the best of the social web and weave it through our platform, so that actually the kind of debate, discussion, question, answer that powers a lot of those arts-based courses can better be replicated online. It may never come a day when you can fully replicate the opportunity of being in a small classroom with a direct tutor and the chance for one-to-one or one-to-few classes alongside, or at least not in a MOOC environment. There's clearly opportunities to offer those kind of services in addition. But I think that we can solve many of the barriers in the way of teaching different subjects. And we certainly are not restricting ourselves or limiting or focusing ourselves excessively on one sort. We want to try things out.
What is the revenue model that you foresee? How is it evolving? And I realize, of course, again, we must return to the point that it's early days. And so I'm sure there's a lot to learn before the final answer to that question can be given. But how do you see the organization earning its revenue today and in the future?
Well, I'll be general first, and then I'll be a bit more specific. I mean, in general, if we attract large numbers of people to FutureLearn, give them a delightful experience, get them coming back repeatedly, then I think there are myriad commercial touch points if we are offering a genuinely added value experience. So, you know, I'm going to be very focused on making sure that any of our commercial services genuinely add something to the learner. More specific, we will start, as other MOOC providers have, by experimenting with delivering some form of statement of participation or accomplishment that one can buy at the end of a course. And we'll also offer the ability to take an examination to demonstrate your mastery of the subject. And that will start in physical test centers, although, of course, we're intrigued by the potential of online invigilation as that becomes more secure and more authenticated. And those are areas we're looking into. There's also, of course, the opportunities to connect people to purchase premium content, whether that's books, textbooks, apps, DVDs, downloads, etc. And we're also interested in different forms of higher touch support that we might offer the learner. Finally, what I'd say is we have had a huge amount of interest from a very broad range of corporates and employers who are interested in the potential of a platform like FutureLearn to transform their training and development of new and established staff. And we're also interested in the sponsorship opportunities and the ability to actually share some of their specialist knowledge for mass audiences and using the web to deliver their own forms of learning. So there's a whole range of opportunity, I believe, in working with employers. We have announced our first relationship with British Telecom, which is going to be a pilot relationship where we work out some models that we can work with companies like that.
As you think about the kind of content that applies across the various opportunities that you've just defined, obviously it begins with traditional academic content from the universities that you've mentioned have signed up in the UK and abroad. In terms of developing that content and engaging people to provide it, especially as now you think about some of the commercial applications, are there a different set of professors, so to speak, teachers of various kinds who you believe will become part of the web of teachers at FutureLearn as a result of or as a reflection of the breadth of opportunities you've just defined?
Again, that's a really great question. And so yes is the answer. Now, one of the things that we've also done is not just announced partnerships with universities and an employer, but also with cultural and content bodies. So initially, the British Museum, British Library and British Council, apologies for the British appearing in all of those words, that isn't deliberate, but they are some of the most world-renowned and highest quality institutions that there are in the UK, and that was our start point. Now, we're intrigued by the potential of matching academics with content owners and content curators from a whole range of different organizations and backgrounds. Some of those might be cultural bodies like the British Library. Some of them might be broadcasters or content owners, content producers. So we're in a whole range of discussions with TV companies who are very interested about using their existing archives, but also complementing the skills of the academics with their own in order to create or co-create courses that use high-quality video. And then, of course, there's also a whole range of publishers, educational publishers, consumer publishers, specialist publishers, who see MOOCs as potentially a new way to reach highly motivated audiences, but also to augment their traditional content with new types of learner experience. Where I get excited is the idea of identifying a course from a university and then putting together three or four partnerships around it that really augment that course, that give it a ready-made set of relationships, potentially business models, and also position the academic course at the heart of a much broader range of online content that enables the learner to jump off into a whole range of different environments, different experiences, and makes FutureLearn a start point, not an end point of a learning journey.
How do you measure success at this stage? Are there certain key performance indicators that you're bearing in mind to let you know whether or not progress is being made?
Absolutely. And we go back to the fact that, you know, I have real data pouring into the company today. It is brilliant to start seeing it come in. So we'll be looking at the traditional metrics, number of people, how long they're spending,
We're particularly looking at how social they're being because, as I say, we've set great store providing a range of social tools. And, you know, I should emphasize, we're still only up in beta at the moment. And so this is a relatively early version of the platform, but innovations are sort of coming in every week, really. So I really want us to be the kind of startup that uses data in extremely flexible and dynamic ways to improve the product, to improve the learner experience, and improve the educator experience, actually. So to help our teachers get better at teaching. The overall thing I'm looking for is quality of the learner experience at this stage. I've got a great owner in the Open University, and I've got a good runway in terms of funding, security. And my priority at the moment is to put a high quality product out there into the market, to learn from our first steps in that market about what learners would really appreciate and what would really deliver outstanding learning outcomes. And I believe if I'm doing that, then the various numbers that I'll need to drive sustainability in the long run will come.
How do you think about competition in this new environment? Universities traditionally, of course, competed in some ways, and certainly the elite universities in many countries have a very international profile. However, almost all of those universities at least primarily serve the communities that they're based in, the countries that they're based in. Now with this model, of course, success, at least partially, will be based upon getting eyeballs and ears involved all around the world. And as now you're competing with MOOCs in a variety of settings who have aggregated a different set of universities and a different set of professors' content, how do you think about competition, especially since there is a new kind of competition, as I've suggested, that MOOCs have relative to traditional universities?
Again, I'd say, you know, this is emergent. At the moment, I think that there's room for everyone, and there's room for the different types of approaches that I believe we're all taking, and we're all kind of learning from each other. And I think that the explosion of different providers and different activity and the amount of noise there is day in, day out in the media all over the world about MOOCs, it's just good for the sector, and it's raising all boats, really. And I think that what FutureLearn's done is, you know, brought a whole range of new institutions, new courses, and hopefully a new approach to the market that maybe will take it on in a different direction. In terms of the competition aspect of it, you know, there's no doubt that universities are highly competitive. And I'd say, just from my own experience of our 20-odd partners, I'd say at the beginning, they were, I'd say, more competitive, more secretive, more concerned about sort of protecting their own competitive position than actually they've become as the FutureLearn partnerships developed. And increasingly, I'm starting to hear and see the development of cooperation and people to see the creative potential as well as potentially the commercial potential of just relaxing a little bit some of the traditional competitive barriers between organizations. I'll say no more at this stage, but except to say I really hope we can get some interesting collaborations off the ground that are greater than the sum of all of their parts, because I think the web rewards collaboration. I think it rewards portfolios. I think it rewards connections and links. And that's something that really, in moving from traditional to digital, I think that organizations need to get their heads around.
Simon, I know that an imperative for you and your team was to launch fully enabled on multiple devices with a focus especially on mobile devices. Can you talk a little bit about the rationale there and benefits that you hope to and perhaps are even already garnering for having done so?
Sure. Well, this is something that we decided almost on day one when we were starting development, that we've all worked for products, for companies where mobile has been an afterthought. And where you've said, okay, let's build for desktop first and then we'll optimize it for mobile. And you know what? That is really, really hard to do. So from the ground up with FutureLearn, we developed with multiple devices in mind. We developed something called a responsive design so that the same design will render appropriately whether you're on desktop, laptop, tablet, mobile. And immediately, you know, we started to see some of the potential and benefits from that, of actually taking learning into new environments, new times of the day. And actually, I believe that we will develop new forms of learning by thinking about delivering these courses on a mobile phone. So already just the experience, for example, of doing just basic multiple choice quizzes on a phone, on the bus, is, you know, very, very different to the thought of, you know, sitting at a desk at home. You're in a different mode. It actually is a very entertaining and fun thing to be doing. And I think we're just scratching the surface at the moment of what mobile learning could deliver. And I'm very excited that we were ahead of the game there.
Well, Simon Nelson, thank you so much for joining me today on the Forum on World Class IT and telling us a bit more about your vision for FutureLearn, for the MOOC space more generally speaking, and congratulations again on your tremendous accomplishment today.
Thanks very much, Peter. It's been great to talk.
The Forum on World Class IT would like to thank Red Hat, the world's leading provider of open source solutions, for being our corporate sponsor. Red Hat believes in the power of openness and shared knowledge to transform how we all do business. Learn more at redhat.com. Listen to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy-setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.